Good evening, everyone. My name's Barbara, and I'm going to be your Bellminder tonight. It's so wonderful to see the usual suspects and also some surprising people who I haven't seen for a while. Welcome. Carolyn and Stanley, welcome. Ania and Jack, welcome. Everybody, welcome. So just sitting here, I'm just feeling so much gratitude, just being together, being with people who I don't really know, being with people who I've known for a long, long time. But I know that we all are making a priority out of becoming our best selves, about making the most of this life. And that's why we're here. And the funny thing is that to do that, we don't really have to do anything. We just have to show up and be present as much as we can and let the magic of the universe work on us. Let our hearts open and let love show us the way. So that's what we're going to do tonight. First, we're going to start with a silent sit, and then we'll have a teaching. So just let that gratitude, as you might look at everybody, just let the gratitude fill you for all these people who have come here together to do this same thing. And then take a moment and remember what your intention is for being here. Why are you here this evening? Maybe to release some stress and tension from your day. Maybe to become inspired. Maybe to gain some clarity. Whatever your intention is right now, just be with it. And then let go of all that and just connect with your breath. And let your in-breath follow all the way in. And follow your out-breath all the way out. And let your mind and body become one through the thread of your breathing. Breathing in, I release all tension in my body and my mind. Breathing out, I smile to my body and my mind. Let the sound of the bell penetrate every cell in your body, releasing and relaxing and connecting you with all other cells in the universe. Listen, listen. This wonderful sound brings me back to my true home. So take a moment to stretch or hydrate or take care of your body in whatever way it needs. So, are you ready to go into the mystery of the great belonging? Fortunately, we're doing this together. His Holiness the Dalai Lama said that the most important spiritual practice is to foster a warm-heartedness, a friendliness for all. There's a book I have called Survival of the Friendliest. The basic premise is that our species evolved not through fighting and competition, but through collaboration and cooperation, and that we wouldn't be here if we hadn't developed those skills. Thay, of course, understood this and has long offered the practice of the little smile. He says, smiling means that you have sovereignty over yourself, that you are not carried away by worries or regrets. If you can be who you are, the whole world benefits. Science tells us that a smile, even if it's a forced one, can make you feel better, because the act of smiling sends signals to your brain that trigger the release of endorphins, dopamine and serotonin, which are feel-good chemicals that quickly lift your mood. Years ago, Dharma teacher Lynn Fine offered my husband Robert the practice of the little smile. He still uses it regularly and considers it a life changer. Often he'll offer a smile to himself, and immediately he feels calmer and more confident, feeling the presence of an ally. It's one of his greatest joys to walk around our campus and smile to those he meets. It certainly makes his world a happier place. This is an example of how our body can help us improve our mood, our attitude toward life, and our ability to be helpful. So for the next 2 months, I'd like you to practice with smiling. You can do it however is best for you. For example, sitting quietly in meditation, you can consciously bring up a little smile. When you look at images of the Buddha, more often than not, they have the hint of a smile. So practice like the Buddha. You can also practice offering a smile to people when you're out and about, strangers who you pass on the street, perhaps. Maybe you already live in a friendly community and do this already. Well, then you can bring more awareness to those interactions and notice what sensations are activated in your body and your feelings when you engage this way. You can smile to dogs and cats, birds, and other creatures too. Recently, Robert has been engaging with friendliness to the snails and slugs in our garden, which is lovely and is also a challenge for me, attached to the flowers and plants they like to munch on. Cole Arthur Riley says, physical awareness is the first step in releasing the tyranny of the past. Our past lives in our bodies. So by using our body, we can access and release old stories that lie hidden, that no longer serve us. Our energy becomes freed up and we are lighter. People notice and are attracted to this freedom. It's been shown that when we have an emotional reaction to one of the myriad things that happen in our day, If we don't acknowledge it and process it, for example, by stopping and breathing consciously, after 15 minutes, that energy will get stored somewhere in our body. When you go to a Plum Village monastery, in the dining hall, a bell rings every 15 minutes, and everyone stops what they're doing and breathes consciously 3 times. Stopping throughout the day is a wonderful practice, teaching us how to be with what is and to let go. Just enjoying a breath and noticing where we are and what is going on in our minds and in our bodies. So, as most of you know, we've been doing assignments of applied practices every 2 months, and this is another one for you besides the smile. Set a bell or a timer, and every time it goes off, stop what you're doing and take 3 conscious breaths. You can start by setting it maybe for every 15 minutes, and then you may want to change it so it's not so frequent. Maybe once an hour is good. Or instead of a bell reminder, you can set a contract with a space. So for example, every time you go through a doorway, you pause and take a conscious breath. You can also stretch and notice any tightness in your body at that time. This can be a powerful, simple way to take good care of ourselves in the present. On the bulletin board at a doctor's office recently, I saw a little sign that said, "Do something today that your future self will thank you for." I like that one a lot. If we take good care of ourselves in these simple ways in the present, our future selves will be happier and more at ease. So let's just stop right now and enjoy breathing and smiling together. You can close your eyes, or you can enjoy the gentle smiles of your Sangha siblings as we all breathe consciously a few times. So you may have noticed that the practices offered here, the smiling and the stopping, help us to let go of being overly self-involved, which can be a habit pattern we've cultivated for a long time. We have a bad hair day, for example, and feel self-conscious about going out in public. Only later we might learn that, in fact, no one has even noticed our hair. They're too involved with their own issues. When we become free of our old patterns of thinking, especially our self-involvement, what comes naturally is a sense of connection. We wake up and notice the amazing beauty and connections of all of life, from the insects to the blooming flowers, to art and music, to the ability of our bodies to do what they can do today, to the people on the highway as we drive along. Just the awareness of connection brings great joy. And there's another gift that comes when we allow ourselves to live from a place of connection. We begin to experience a sense of belonging. When we recognize and accept the interconnection of all life, we see that we are part of that life, part of that interconnection. We're not standing outside nature, peering in. We are nature, magnificent creations made of earth, water, sun, and air. Belonging allows us to release our defenses and to show up just as we are, not to try to have to be or do anything except our own shining selves. Many of us have lived with the feeling of not fitting in, of being left out, of not feeling enough, or of not being part of a family or a community. We might even believe that there's something wrong with us, something missing, that we need to find, so that we'll experience the ease that we sense others feel. But we cannot fix ourselves with this level of understanding, because the reality is that there is nothing wrong or incomplete about us. We are whole. We have everything we need right now. Our Buddha nature is full and complete, just waiting for us to recognize and relax into it fully. We may have a bit of dusting to do before it can shine fully, so that is our work, the focus of our joyful effort. The poet and spiritual teacher Mark Nepo says, "We waste so much energy trying to cover up who we are, when beneath every attitude is the want to be loved, and beneath every anger is a wound to be healed, and beneath every sadness is the fear that there won't be enough time. When we hesitate in being direct, we unknowingly slip something on, some added layer of protection that keeps us from feeling the world. And often that thin covering is the beginning of a loneliness, which if not put down, diminishes our chances of joy. It's like wearing gloves every time we touch something, and then forgetting we chose to put them on, we complain that nothing feels quite real. Our challenge each day is not to get dressed to face the world, but to unglove ourselves so that the doorknob feels cold, and the car handle feels wet, and the kiss goodbye feels like the lips of another being, soft and unrepeatable." And the poet David White says the same thing about belonging in his own unique way. "True belonging is the spiritual practice of believing in and belonging to yourself so deeply that you can share your most authentic self with the world and find sacredness in both being a part of something and standing alone in the wilderness. True belonging doesn't require to change who you are. It requires you to be who you are." And here's a poem from David White. "This is the bright home in which I live. This is where I ask my friends to come. This is where I want to love all the things that has taken me so long to learn to love. This is the temple of my adult aloneness, and I belong to that aloneness as I belong to my life. There is no house like the house of belonging." So I'd like to spend the rest of our time together considering our intentions and wider possibilities in our spiritual practice, going beyond the personal. As bodhisattvas in training, we're dedicated to becoming more loving human beings, to heal our wounds, and to free our energy to become helpers. Of course, as Krishnamurti says, "What you are, the world is, and without your transformation, there can be no transformation of the world." We know this is always true. And we also might want to consider this in a collective way. How can I help the collective energy move towards enlightened action, awakened ways of being and doing? Arundhati Roy says, "Another world is not only possible, she is on her way. On a quiet day, I can hear her breathing." We are being encouraged to look beyond the personal to the collective, and to consider that our spiritual work might be part of the collective evolutionary impulse, that our consciousness is moving toward a new place where the illusion of separation no longer reigns. The novelist Tom Robbins reminds us, "In the matter of the evolution of the individual, evolving is not accomplished for a person by nature or society, but is the central dimension of personal drama to which nature and society are but spectators. Wasn't it made clear that civilization is not an end in itself, but a theater or gymnasium in which the evolving individual finds facilities for practice?" Can you feel that movement of evolution within yourself? Perhaps as your deepest desire. I'd like to speak to that part of you now. I'm going to share extensively from several spiritual visionaries who might help us broaden our view of the possibilities for what's happening in our world right now. The first is Patricia Albert, who is founder of the Evolutionary Collective, and she expresses her vision this way. Evolutionary quantum forces are bringing new potentials for us. When there's a leap from one epoch to another, there's a certain level of chaos that is difficult to live through. No matter what the outer appearance, this leap beckons us towards divinization, an unimaginable shift into a new world where our highest potentials unfold within a unified reality beyond separation. Here we are not mere participants, but the very cells needed for the zygote of a new divinized humanity. To embrace this future, we must recognize that it demands more than our individual practices or strategic efforts to successfully survive. We are being invited into mutual awakening, a shared journey beyond the confines of our subjective reality and spiritual isolation. This new world, rich in transparency, intimacy, and divine love, requires us to be all in, influenced by the evolutionary forces at play. This vision takes me back to our teacher's prediction that the next Buddha to be born won't be an individual, but a community. It will take waking up together as an organism to accomplish the leap to embodied enlightenment. If we entertain this possibility, we can take heart in our uncertainty. The very nature of the stage of evolution is that we can't see what's coming, what possibilities lie just beyond our view. We don't know what the seemingly horrific things happening in our world might be leading to. But we do know that our path is to turn our attention fully to what is here and now, the beauty as well as the sorrow, and to rest here. To understand that the nature of our world is change, and that change makes everything possible. So there are several visionaries I turn to in considering what our future world may look like. Not the ones on the news that mostly predict doom and gloom, but spiritual visionaries who are able to envision evolutionary possibilities and help us be part of the change. So first, Patricia Albert has a little more to say. She's seeking and experiencing the very beginnings of a new stage of evolution, one where humans embody interbeing instead of separation. She explains that in evolution, there have been quantum leaps, like the ones where suddenly single-cell organisms came into being, setting the stage for all the flora and fauna to come, the geosphere and the biosphere. Then came our human ability to be aware of our awareness and to be able to choose where to put our attention, our energy, our life force. Albert believes that we are now in the beginning of the next stage of evolution that she calls the divinization of existence. She describes this quantum leap as our full embodiment of both our particularity and our unity. As individuals, we are here to learn through our mistakes and challenges to grow into our full embodiment. Now she believes the forces are shifting to a group experience, so that learning is how learning and growing takes place through being in a whole, mutual awakening, a sangha. This is how the quantum leap to awakening will happen, letting go of the illusion of our separateness, as Thay says. Most important, says Patricia, is that what is evolving, what is coming through needs our attention, our generosity of heart. Like a baby sprout coming up from the earth, it needs tender caring, kind attention, and loving focus for it to grow and become its full potential, This is our work as bodhisattvas. Barbara Marx Hubbard was one of the first spiritual visionaries of our time after Teilhard de Chardin. Many years ago, she shared her vision that our planetary crisis is a birth, that we are in the process of birthing the universal human. She reminds us that birthing looks messy and dangerous, and that we need to continue to have faith in the process of our goodness, that if we are courageous and true to our highest understanding, we will be part of the healing and transforming of our world, and we will birth the universal human, the Bodhisattva. The reality is that the Buddha needs our bodies to effect change in the world. We are his physical manifestation. Starting in the year 2000, every other year at Plum Village, Thay offered a three-week retreat with the title Hands of the Buddha, Feet of the Buddha, etc. Basically, some body part of the Buddha. I think Thay was trying to remind us that we are the hands and the feet and the body of the Buddha, and it's crucial that we learn to live our lives in a way that our Buddha nature shines. This is the dimension of action, where evolution happens. There's a spiritual evolution underway, and we are invited to be part of it, to help shift our world to a new dimension of consciousness. So how do we focus more on our evolutionary potential as we heal ourselves and develop our bodhisattva eye? Another spiritual visionary is my meditation teacher, Craig Hamilton, who teaches students all over the world to awaken to our spiritual evolutionary response as the path to heal and transform our species. He offers four practices to live an evolving life. The first one is, life is not about me. I need to lose my egoic view. Especially in thinking about the future, I need to look wider than its effects on just me and my loved ones, to learn to care more for the community than for my personal self. I remember going to Plum Village for the first time, sitting and talking with a monk outside as we watched the weather change and these dark clouds approached. And I told him, I said, you know, it'd be okay with me if it rains because I have an umbrella. And he looked at me and asked, do you have umbrellas for everyone? So ethics is our inner navigation system. As we listen and follow deeper guidance, our alignment with the collective wisdom deepens, and our actions more clearly reflect our ethics. As we orient towards the greater good, our moral compass grows. We begin to live a life of moral beauty. We respond in both small and large ways with beauty and joy, and we are agents of healing and transformation for the greater world. Craig's third principle of living an evolving life is, I have an obligation to contribute to evolution. You may not have ever thought of this, so we're doing an expansion here. This process starts with cultivating trust. Trust in our own basic goodness, expanding to the basic goodness of the universe. When we trust in life, we learn to let go of the need to control and to be sure. Then we can open to the mystery of the moment, which is where spontaneous wisdom arises. We decide to act from a place of trust, and to do this, we need to let go of putting our energy into the doom and gloom story. Instead, we put all our energy into training as bodhisattvas, so our inner and outer motivations come only from love, from what's best for the whole. And the third principle from Craig is, my life is an evolutionary experiment. Coming from this attitude allows us to take risks when necessary. experimenting and exploring are ways to expand our consciousness. When you see the truth, you need to name it for the greater good. When you take your place as part of the experiment of evolution, you have an obligation to step into the deepest part of you and then speak and act from there. We might hesitate because we're afraid the world will expect this of us always. Who knows? Maybe this becomes our new norm. Maybe we live from this deepest part of ourselves, inviting the risks so we can learn and grow and expand our hearts and minds. We become more vulnerable, more enthusiastic, and we live up to the inevitable challenges that are coming. And the fourth of the four principles is, be more interested in the future than in the past. Our view, our energy is more focused on possibilities than regrets, or on how things used to be. We become fascinated with what we don't know, with stretching into the unknown. We hold the understanding that what looks like an obstacle might be just the very thing we need to get us to the next stage of evolution. We know that challenges are the very thing we need to bring us together and to remind us of what we hold most dear. Many years ago, I attended the Santa Fe Opera, which is held outdoors, and there's a roof over your head, but there's no walls. So early on in the opera, huge bolts of lightning filled the sky, followed by such tremendous thunder that everyone on stage just stopped what they were doing. In the audience, I looked down the row, and all along, each person was gripping the arm of the person next to them, whether they were strangers or friends. In that moment, we all knew what to do. We reached for one another. Craig says, "My life is an unfolding evolutionary process, and so the most helpful response is the evolutionary response." What is the response that will help us break free and create possibilities for transformation? How do I foster the essence of this understanding? Let's stop and have a little contemplation on this now. I become still and invite up the evolutionary impulse within me, the energy of deep desire to be part of the flowering of humanity, the impulse to awaken, to create, and to evolve are in me, fueled by my bodhicitta. I see all my spiritual ancestors behind me, supporting and encouraging me. I see that all my spiritual practice has enabled me to be part of this quantum leap into mutual awakening, into this new level of manifestation of love. I take my place as part of the evolutionary impulse. Deepak Chopra is also a spiritual visionary who offers also offers four ways for us to monitor our evolutionary response. He says that if people experience these four things every day, we will evolve. The first is a joyful, energetic body, as much as our capacity is in the moment. A loving, compassionate heart. A reflective, quiet, creative mind. And joy, a lightness of being, a return to the state of innocence. So as we wake up each morning, it's crucial that we remember to fuel our intentions, not only for the day ahead, but also for the eon ahead, for our great future filled with unknowable possibilities. That we hold the vision that we are in a terribly messy crisis that might just be leading to the next level of evolution. And in fact, we experience a taste of that evolution when we come home to our bodies and hearts and touch our Buddha nature. We call on our courage and our resilience as we maintain our steady practice of living a life of spiritual wellness. In this way, we become the beacons that shine light on the next step of our great path forward. Here's a poem by Dana Foltz called Together. We call down grace and gaze without wavering into the fires of creation. We find the place where love embraces fear and tears taste like faith. We let our radiance be revealed in laughter and in longing. We hold the whole of life, sweet grapes and bitter healing herbs. We hold until we overflow and offer back the gifts that we've received. The vessel never empties. The glowing love between us keeps it filled. So I'd like to end with my favorite topic, love. Wendell Berry says, I believe that the world was created and approved by love, and that it subsists, coheres, and endures by love, and that insofar as it is redeemable, it can be redeemed only by love. As spiritual practitioners, it's likely that we've had experiences of divine or spiritual love. Experiences that allow us to recognize that love is woven into the very fabric of reality, a sense that our own true nature is love, that who we most deeply are is love. This is our core, our center, our bodhicitta. And when we connect with this heart of love, understanding in us grows that the universe is held up by a source of infinite unconditional love that's present in every moment. There's never a moment and never a place where love does not fully penetrate and permeate. From this experience, we understand that true love is unconditional. It's not something I have to earn or generate or create or become worthy of or prove I'm good enough for. It's already here, full and complete. The whole cosmos is shot through with love, beginning to end and beyond. So let's just take another moment to return to the awareness of our bodhicitta, to let go into the knowing that our hearts are made of goodness, and that this basic goodness is not separate from anything. In fact, it's the ground of everything. When we return to our breath and our body and mind become unified in this moment, we are already resting in the heart of this goodness. So when we think of love, we often think of it as a feeling. We think of it as a warm, overwhelmingly positive, uplifting, soothing feeling that we want to have more of. But though love does have a lot of beautiful feelings associated with it, this is not the most important aspect of love. As Craig Hamilton says, as long as we believe that we need to feel more love in order to be love, we're missing the essence of love. If we understand that this love is ever present everywhere, at all times freely given and never lacking, that every moment is full of that love in every corner of the cosmos, that it's the very nature of who we are, we don't need to feel it to fully step forth and be it. Craig asks, what if instead of striving to feel more love, we return to this experience of bodhicitta and remind ourselves that unconditional love is the ground of everything? What if our evolutionary calling is to show the world that love is real? How would we do this? By demonstrating its existence every minute of our life, whether we feel a current of love in that moment or not. How would you live if you took that up as your challenge, as your calling? Because that's what we're already doing as committed bodhisattvas in training, experiencing and modeling that love is the driving force in the universe, the evolutionary impulse, and we are helping to make it manifest in new creative ways. Certainly, living a life of kindness is an expression of the truth of this love. What else happens when we know and live from the reality that all is love? If love is the most important thing there is, and we accept that it's never lacking, never not present, then the most important thing can never be taken away. I don't have to worry about losing it. And that means I can let go. I can let go of wanting or needing anything else from this world. I can let go of grasping, of living in fear of lack or loss. Being a bodhisattva means that whether or not I feel particularly loved or particularly loving, I'm going to respond to life from bodhicitta, from the heart of love. Instead of coming from my personal egoic needs and my agendas and identity, I'm able to let go and just respond spontaneously and creatively in the most loving way possible. I'm no longer going to believe in the story of limitations, that I'm not complete as I am right now, that there's something wrong with me or with the world, that there's some method to get more love that I need to pursue. No matter how challenging life gets, I will never give in to the temptation to believe that something is missing, that love is lacking. We might still have goals and aspirations, but we understand that none of those things are going to add any love to my life because love is already there. I can let go of striving to change, of believing that things need to be different before I can experience more love. And here's the thing. I know that if all things that I fear might happen do happen, there still won't be any less love. The most important thing will still be here in its fullness and completeness. The nature of life will still be love. Without the need for preoccupation on getting more of what we want and preventing what we don't want, we can start to let go of our small self and we begin to experience equanimity. Without constriction or limitations, our hearts become as big as the sky. I become my true self, boundless, sacred love. Our response becomes a vast, deep caring for all beings and for the earth herself. We ask, how can I help everyone know this love? How can I help the world know that the love we're striving so hard for is actually the ground we're standing on? Because if everybody really knew this, every human action would be a sacred act of communion. We'd create heaven on earth. Our work is to prove the reality of love with everything we do. We need to show the way. The world needs to wake up. We each have limited time and resources left. So this day and the next, I need to choose to develop my ability to express love creatively and joyfully. And here's what happens. When we make the decision to make love our only priority, we begin to know love more and more, not just through feeling a particular way, but through taking refuge in our true self, our bodhicitta. This is our true home. And what Wendell Berry, another of our spiritual visionaries, says, we have in us deeply planted instructions, personal, cultural, and natural, to survive. And we do not need much experience to inform us that we cannot survive alone. The smallest possible survival unit appears to be the universe. Inside it, everything happens in concert. Not a breath is drawn, but by the grace of an inconceivable series of vital connections. Joining an inconceivable multiplicity of created things in an inconceivable unity. It may be that our marriages, kinships, friendships, neighborhoods, and all our forms and acts of homemaking are the rites by which we solemnize and enact our union with the universe. They give the word love its only chance for meaning, for only they can give it a history, a community, and a place. Only in such ways can love become flesh and do its worldly work. It is only in these bonds that our individuality has a use and a worth. It is only to the people who know us, who love us and depend on us, that we are indispensable as the persons we uniquely are. Separate from the relationships, there is nobody to be known. At the last breakfast that Martin Luther King and Thich Nhat Hanh shared, they agreed that the primary challenge before us all is the realization of beloved community. Stepping into the world as lovers, as love, is our bodhisattva work. To be so courageous and clear and resilient that we're able to respond in love to every situation. We call on our bodhisattva brothers and sisters to show us the way, especially Manjushri for clear seeing, and Avalokiteshvara for love and compassion, and Satipariputta for teaching us how to see the bodhicitta in everyone. We do our work every day, setting our intentions with clarity, learning to place our energy and attention on how to respond, and then moving with joy and spontaneity and openness through the moments that we are given. And this leads us deeper to the great mystery of life, reminding us that we're merely a cell in this wonderful organism. And now we begin to see a step forward on our path, devoting ourselves to the embodiment of love. And we also need to remember that life is a mystery, and that our view, no matter how clear and how wide, is only a glimpse of the magnificence of reality. Maria Popova asked the question, "What is life?" And she answers it this way. To be human is to live suspended between the scale of gluons and the scale of galaxies, yearning to fathom our place in the universe. That we exist at all on this uncommon rocky world, just the right distance from its common star, adrift in a galaxy amid hundreds of billions of galaxies, each sparkling with hundreds of billions of stars, each orbited by numberless possible worlds, is already miracle enough. A bright gift of chance amid the cold, dark sublime of pure space-time. a triumphal something against the staggering cosmic odds of nothingness. Stationed here on this one and only home planet, we have opposed our thumbs to build microscopes and telescopes, pressing our curiosity against the eyepiece, bending our complex consciousness around what we see, longing to peer a little more deeply into the mystery of life with the mystery of us. So we learn to embody love so that we become a healing evolutionary response to life in every moment. And always there will be a mystery greater than we can understand that holds us all. Being aware of our place in this tapestry of love and in this mystery is coming home. The mystery continues to entice us, and love answers the questions that mystery presents. Though always moving and changing, the mystery is always there on the other side of the mirror, a promise in the next pair of eyes that smile at us. We glimpse it when we are able to be still and present. I'd like to end with a poem by Rosemary Wattola Traumer. It's called "There Is This Moment." With the full moon rising and a large bird of prey gliding spirals in the sky, and my husband on my right, my sweet friend on my left, and the two-person band transforming sorrow into joy just by singing it in harmony and giving the song their everything. And maybe that's what is ours to do, to give ourselves wholly to a moment as if we are the singers and life the song. So I give myself to the low summer sun and the dust on my feet, to the pucker of lime and the tears of my friend. I give myself to the ache that never leaves and the relentless beauty that ever arrives. And the more I give myself to the world, the more the world rushes in and says, "Home, home, home, you are home." May we all be at home together in joy. Thank you for being here. Are there any announcements tonight? No announcements. Okay.
Barbara, thank you so much. One announcement for those of us from Tiger Mountain Sangha: we'll reconvene in our regular Sangha Zoom Do after a short bio break.
So for all that we have fed on here, for all the nourishment that we've experienced, for all the love and connection from being together, we know how much the world needs this, all these most crucial parts of life. We can't survive without this feeling of connection and love and calm and inspiration. So let's offer it out to all beings everywhere. May the merits of this practice benefit all beings and bring peace. Thank you, everyone, for being here. So good to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Oh, I'm so grateful, Barbara. Thank you so much.
Beautiful, Barbara.
So enriching. Ah.
Thank you, Barbara. So full.
So grateful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure.